Hello and welcome to yet another episode of Technofunda Investing Podcast. And we have amazing guest podcast today. And guess what? We have founder of Weekend Investing, who is having more than 25 years of experience in the Indian investing industry. And he was one of the first to set up the NSE membership in Delhi in 1996. He has various clients from HNIs to institutions to retail. And he's somebody who has graduated from IIT Delhi in 1991 and then his Master in Finance and MBA from University of Maryland, USA in 1995. And we have none other than Alok Jain with us, who is going to talk with us in terms of what are his thoughts in terms of rule-based investing, how he does this magic of weekend investing, and what are different perspectives when it comes to this kind of investing. So welcome, Alok ji. Great to have you here in our podcast channel. And it's always amazing to connect with you and speak with you.
Thank you, Vivek ji. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to speak with you and with your followers. And I'm sure this will be a good interactive session.
Thank you so much. So we'll straight go into the meat of your journey, right? So what is your journey overall over the last few years? And how has your strategy evolved over a period of time? Like, were you doing the same thing what you do here right now in your weekend investing, or there has been some evolution in that entire path?
So I started, as you rightly said, in 1995 in the markets. And primarily as a intermediary providing services to others. But along the way, I was investing on my own account. And I was finding that with each cycle, I was making a lot of money, but then I was losing it all. So after almost 10 or 12 years, I was, after maybe one of the falls in 2000, maybe, I said that, there is some fundamental issue that is wrong in my investing, because I on the upside I'm making a lot of money, but on the downside I'm losing it most of it. So I need to somehow curtail the losses that happen when the markets are in a bear phase. So that's when I was started to think about the importance of exit strategies. So as I usually say, entry is very, very easy at any point of time, but it is the exit which actually defines you as a good investor or a trader, because you have to exit in profit or you have to exit in loss, but that exit has to be defined.
Yes.
And then iterations over so many years, and then 2008 crash also happened. I did slightly better in that crash. But overall, the trend of my thought process was that I need to do a marriage of the investing principles and trading principles. Mm-hmm. So from the investing side, I want, the makeup of a portfolio and diversification, benefits of a portfolio. But from the trading side, I want, better entry, better exit, better position sizing, etc. And so I kind of merged the learnings from those two spheres, and I created something, my own capital on, and essentially small 20-25 stock portfolios with specific rule-based entries, rule-based exits, and practically everything predefined in terms of, how you're going to position size, how you're going to exit, every situation in the market that can come about is that scenario is pre-built. What will you do in case that happens? So that I kept practicing for several years, even after I left broking. And then I rolled out the same products as a SEBI advisor later on in the last many years.
Amazing. And how did you start writing this blog? Like, what was the genesis of that? I remember back in, I think, 2015-16 when you became active on your blog Weekend Investing. And you
so 2012-13 is where I was winding down the brokerage business, and I was doing this investing on my own capital a little bit. So 13-14-15, they became very boring years, because the entire team was I had about a 20 member team in my office for broking. That once I gave up broking, that entire office and team, etc., went away. I started working from home, and I used to be in my room all alone, and just doing, you know, these few trades once a week. So it became very boring and frustrating, sort of. So then I came up, although I had a Twitter account since 2010, but I never used it. So somewhere in 2015, I said, you know, let me start to write about these strategies and I'll post it on Twitter just for more interaction so that, you know, there is more two-way communication with some market people, because all that other communication that usually when you are in any, as an intermediary, you're talking entire day to clients, to other intermediaries, you know, to other brokers. But all that interaction had gone away. So I decided to, you know, use the digital media. And I said, let me put up all my, you know, the trades and strategy, etc. on Twitter, and we'll get some engagement. And within a year or so, there was a lot of engagement that happened on Twitter. And, you know, several people reached out and said that we also want to run these strategies. So why don't you, you know, offer these as products? So the Weekend Investing brand actually came around by, you know, people wanting it. And we established a business after that.
Amazing journey. And I remember, like, you are almost like authority when it comes to momentum investing. You are one of the father of momentum investing in India, at least if I can see the way you have successfully scaled up your operations. You have more than 17,000 plus subscribers on Small Case, and the way you do is like very different, right? Traditionally, if you see momentum investing, when we look at traders who are running algos on very, very short time frame, high frequency trading. And here you are, you know, doing totally different thing. As you mentioned, you know, you are blending the principles of portfolio creation and what you learned in your trading journey. And here you are doing this entire thing on weekend. Tell us more about it, like how it is so peaceful and how, you know, in short period of time, you are able to do all these things.
So the genesis of this Weekend Investing came around because of my own sort of limitation, I would say, that I did not want to be engaged in the market the entire week. Having, you know, spent almost two decades in the market, I was like, you know, I don't want to sit in front of the screen the entire day. And I should devise a way where I can invest without, you know, that noise bothering me the entire day, the market's moving up and down. That noise should not bother me in my investing. So hence that, you know, the frequency of your sort of review or the frequency at which you look at your portfolio, that is a very sort of essential element in terms of, you know, the churn of your portfolio and how quickly or how, you know, how decisions are being made about your portfolio. So after a lot of testing, a lot of back testing, a lot of actual running, I realized that, you know, this hourly, daily time frame sort of noise that exists, it is avoidable. So if we are doing long-term investing, which this is all about, and people kind of, you know, don't think of momentum as long-term, you know, they think momentum is high frequency, but it need not be. So like our kind of strategies, our average hold is like 3 to 6 months for a stock. So it is sort of medium-term investing, you can say. But the idea was that, you know, not to be fixed to the computer for 5 days a week, take a review of the portfolio once a week and then be done with it. So, you know, you are free for to live your life for the rest of the time. And the daily noise or the hourly noise of the market should not bother you. Of course, there are opportunities which you will miss still.
Yeah.
But there are then other opportunities, other, you know, at other times you will gain also by ignoring the noise.
Absolutely.
So over time, it dawned upon me that one, it reduces cost because your churn is low. It reduces your stress level by a very large amount because once you have executed your weekly change, if there is any, then you know that your next weekly change is coming in a week. So, you know, you're not bothered really. And of course, market may keep going up and down, and but there is no, you know, event to be happened during the day.
Yes.
And more than that, I think it is just that, you know, the returns were so nice and all our prior testing of about 10 years of data, we tested from 2005 to 2015-16 when we started this actually. And even in the forward run that we actual run that we did from 2016 onwards, we found that when you can create benchmark beating returns without, you know, having so much anxiety about the market or without being in the market at in every second of the day, and without, you know, being hyper about the stocks up and down, then why bother about it at all? You know, now most of our strategy, in fact, all of our strategies have beaten the benchmarks by a wide margin over the last 4 or 5 years. So when you can get those kind of results without the pain associated with deep drawdowns or, you know, the anxiety of watching the market up and down, then why do that?
Exactly. Exactly. When you can do it peacefully without having an army of analysts and still get 50 returns, then why bother, right? And that is the next question. You know, I keep watching your daily bites also. And recently in your YouTube channel where you did this daily bites, you did a video on Bhav Bhagwanji, and you keep taking this example often, or this proverb often, which is a Gujarati proverb.
Yes.
You primarily look price as a, you know, indicator that something is going to happen in a company, and there might be a growth coming in the company, and company is going in the next level in their journey. And pretty much same thing, probably, you know, fundamental research analysts do it after the news is out and after the, you know, action has happened.
Correct.
So what is your thought process? Like, what is your screening strategies connected to price volume action? How do you look at it? And what is the edge that you have, like the outperformance you are doing? What do you think the primary edge you have, which other investors might not be having? Because I see a lot of mutual funds, they don't even outperform the market. Like 70% of mutual funds out there, they are not able to even, you know, beat Nifty returns.
So yeah, so it's edge? A good question. The main, I think, reason is that most of the mutual funds or such vehicles, they are very, very large. They are like big elephants. And elephants can't move fast. So if they want to, let's say a mutual fund is invested in 50 stocks, and if they want to drop 2 stocks from their portfolio, they need to find an institution who will pick those 2 stocks from them.
Yes.
Right. So, I mean, the nimbleness of exit and entry is not available as your size becomes larger and larger. And hence, that is the reason why they need to probably keep sticking to top 100, top 150 names, where the alpha is not, you know, as great as you could get in some mid caps or even some larger small caps. But having said that, when you take a look at any index, for instance, like Nifty has 50 stocks. In any given period, you will see that, you know, maybe 80 stocks will not do so well or be average, but 20 stocks will do very well. You know, the 80-20 Pareto rule applies everywhere.
Yep.
So with our kind of momentum selection, what happens is that we invariably pick most of those top 20% names in our portfolios. And of course, some of the other ones also, but our selection process is sort of, you know, selection of the fittest rule. So, or you can say survival of the fittest rule, as Darwin theory is there. So if the stock is not doing well, our system will automatically drop it after some time. And the stocks which are doing well automatically get picked up into the system. So there is a natural churn that happens where you stay with the strength of the market. And naturally, when you will stay with the strength of the market, you will mostly beat the index by a wider margin, because the index also is taking care of the weakness in the market. So it is like, you know, like a relay race is happening, where you are always with the leading pack, and you are letting go of the pack which falls behind without any emotion, without any, you know, even though some stocks may have very good fundamental value. But because that fundamental value is not getting corroborated with the price action, so you are not, you know, your focus is on price action only. So you are saying, regardless of the fundamental value, I am willing to bet on the stocks which are demonstrating that the price action is strong.
Understood.
And a lot of outperformance is because this is a non-discretionary, totally non-emotional way of stock selecting, where you are not really going any deep into the fundamental side, except for, you know, basic red flag, etc. And you are not getting attached to the stock. In conventional investing, you get attached to the stock because you do so much research about it, and then you look at its product and you're consuming the products. And, you know, you feel that sooner or later, the quality management will take care of the business. So there's a lot of ifs and buts and, you know, guesses and hope that goes into the conventional investing.
Yes.
Whereas this is very, very data oriented. This is very, very, you know, quant based, and there is no emotion. And I'll give you an example, like when, like March 2020, when the market fell down, most of our strategies either went to full cash because all the exits happened, or the strategies where we don't go to cash, where which are rotational momentum in nature, they went into defensive stocks. So mostly, you know, FMCG, IT, pharma, those kind of stocks were rotated into. And once the market started moving, then the stocks rotated automatically back into, you know, metals or other commodities or other things that went out, or IT later on again. So there is a sort of a natural rotation of sectors that keep happening when you are staying with the strength. I think that's what creates the sort of magic of outperformance.
Amazing. So basically you are, you know, banking upon the demand supply. You are, you know, basically following those top 5% of people who are, you know, putting their money. Maybe they might be putting into defensives, or maybe they are doing sector rotation, and that creates the demand and that gets reflected in the price. And you basically...
Mera Vivek ji manna hai ke, demand supply is there in everything. I mean, every market is driven only by demand and supply. We create narratives around that demand and supply to justify our positions. So, I mean, so many cases we see, and in fact, I saw a study also on this that I think the Mint had published, where they showed that if 100 point is the gain during the year in a Nifty, then 70 points comes from pre-earnings period. And only 30 points comes during earning and post-earning period. The movement in a positive movement in a stock. Whereas the same figures in the US are much lower. Right. So the pre-earning movement is only 20-30 percentage point. So our market is very, very porous. So we get a lot of news in the market, in the prices, much before the news is disseminated.
We are still semi-developed market. Basically, we are not yet fully that kind of informationally efficient market as such.
Yeah, so this is actually helping momentum in a big way, because you are able to catch the momentum and price much before the public announcement is made about, you know, whatever good results or acquisition or whatever it may be. And even on the other side, where bad results are coming, we see that in many cases, we are out of the stock much before the bad news reaches the market.
Yes, yes.
And that is the sort of, you know, that's why we call this a BBC principle, Bhav Bhagwan Che, is what we follow. That the price is already telling us what to do. Why to preempt what will happen in the stock when the price itself is telling you that you need to come in or you need to get out.
Yes.
So it is like saying that, you know, we are following the market. Whereas in conventional investing, you are saying, I know more than the market. The market is valuing the stock at 10 rupees, but it should be 50. So I am actually thinking ahead of the market, and the market will follow me. So there's a very different sort of psychology that is there in the two styles of investing.
Yes, yes. And again, you know, there are more than 3-4 crores of active participants in market. And sometimes, you know, it also gives us a lot of question marks that are we like having more IQ than the combined IQ of the market wisdom, right? And that is where we need to also have that big picture. Of course, in some very micro caps where there is information arbitrage, there might be people who have information edge and they might be knowing more about that company. But frankly, you know, top 200, 500 companies, I think we have to respect the market, because there are so many people tracking it, and much smarter people than us who are
also tracking. I would think that, you know, when you do rule-based investing, and you could do it rule-based investing on fundamental also. So when you're doing rule-based investing, your parameters or your boundaries of your, you know, your system are defined.
Yes.
So it helps you mentally to keep your decision-making in line with your system, because you know those boundaries. You yes. know how much to, you know, buy, when to buy, how much to sell, when to sell. So all those things, when they're defined, it helps in better decision making. That itself improves their performance.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is something which I practice. So I basically see the fundamentals of the company, the kind of sector which it is in, and then yes. decide my exit rules. I decide correct, my position correct, sizing, correct. How much tighter indicator I need to use, or leaner correct, indicator correct. I need to use. If I have high conviction, I'll probably start with 2% allocation. Otherwise, yes. I'll start with 1% yes. allocation, those kind of things. Amazing. So you have like different, you know, styles of portfolio which you have built within the small case platform. Also, I see you have
yeah.
MI20, you have MI35, you have NNF100. You have a long-term CNX 200, you have something like evergreen in the portfolio. What is the thought process behind it and how it serves different categories of investors?
Yeah, so this is a good question. Basically, I find that the market itself is very, very diverse in terms of the requirements of the participants. So there are people who want to create only like a core portfolio out of top 200 stocks. So they would be looking for, you know, momentum portfolios within CNX 200. There are people who are looking for only, you know, very high beta, alpha creation over small cap stocks. Then there are others who want to do a small cap, mid cap, sort of an all cap strategy. Then we have strategies where we have also included gold as a hedge. So in the evergreen strategy, we have 25% allocation to ETFs on gold. And that has created a fantastic hedging mechanism, sort of as an insurance to the equity part of it. So these are different segments of requirement, actually, from users based on which these products are designed. And different products also have different pricing points. Mm-hmm. To help, smaller portfolios or to cater to larger portfolios.
Amazing. And for all the listeners who are listening to this podcast, I'll share the link below this podcast also. So if you want to explore these different strategies, and there are a lot of other insights, you know, you can see the fact sheets and what is the thought process and more details about these strategies. But the follow-up question here is like, if suppose any investor, like there are again different kinds of investors, right? You might have HNI people who have like more than crores of portfolio, and there might be somebody who is just getting started, you know, their first job and want to invest like 10,000, 20,000 rupees also. Is there any way in your small case product, like with a small ticket size in a SIP format, they can participate in the Indian capital markets and get advantage of your expertise in this particular overall momentum investing style?
So most of the products on small case that we have are geared towards smaller retail investors. I would say the usual bracket of portfolio size that comes to us is 2 to 5 lakhs. There are some products like NG5050, which is a free ETF product on Nifty and Goldbees, that is also available. So you could start it with even 500 rupees. But primarily because of the reason where in a 20 stock portfolio, if any one stock is, let's say, 5,000 rupees worth, then to even create that one lot requires minimum 1 lakh rupees.
Yes.
So most of our strategies henceforth start, you know, from 1 to 2 lakhs sort of minimum range. But then over and above that, you can do a small SIP on that. So weekly, monthly SIPs are available where you could do a SIP as low as 500 rupees also. But the minimum starting level is something that there's a small case platform minimum that we need to do to create one lot of, yes. of the underlying stocks.
Understood. Just to clarify to all the users, like imagine there is Asian Paints, one stock is Pidilite, one stock is, Shivalik Bimetal. For purchasing each stock, at least one quantity, you know, you need certain amount. And that is why, you know, what Alokji was saying is there is some threshold which you require. And then, of course, there is a SIP kind of thing which you can do. Now, Alokji, on exit side, you know, a lot of investors actually get stuck into exit, like those who build their own portfolio or even follow fundamental investing. I have again read more than 50, 60 books in my CFA also. There is not a single rule which says ki 50 ka PE is an exit or 100 PE. Sometimes 10 PE is a exit. Sometimes 50 PE is a point to buy, right? So there is no objective way. Even DCF, correct, one estimate you tweak and entire valuation goes in haywire. So what is your thought process on exit strategies? And if somebody wants to learn exit objectively, like, what are your suggestions, like how you do? And if you want to recommend somebody to start learning that process, what should they do eventually?
So I think if somebody is doing fundamental investing, then the exits will need to be fundamental in nature. So, you know, whether it is quality of management, whether it is market share, whether it is, margins going up or down, whether it is profitability. So those parameters are important for fundamental investors, based on which they can sense whether the market is, whether the stock is about to lose its dominance or whatever it may be. But on technical side, like we are doing price action based strategies, so you could use price action as an exit strategy. So, the simplest of it could be, you could use like a percentage drop. For instance, somebody may have a rule that, if the stock price drops 30% from the top, I will exit. Somebody may use an average true range. If the average true range is breached over last, let's say, 14 days, I'll exit. Somebody may use a moving average that, I'll take a 10-week moving average. Whenever price is below that, I will exit. If somebody is doing a larger time frame sort of investing, then 200 DMA is a very good sort of a benchmark, where you may create a rule that if your stock is below 200 DMA, you're not interested to hold it. Mm-hmm. You will buy it again once it is above 200 DMA. Yes. So those kind of simple rules, can be created around most of the technical side, but even fundamental guys can have an overlay of these rules and, see that if in case 200 DMA is getting breached, it'll give you an alert to go and review the fundamentals again.
Yes.
Why is my stock falling? Why is it gone below 200 DMA when others are above it?
Yeah.
And that may prompt you or at least help you in getting more, knowledge about that particular event that is about to happen maybe. So these are some very basic rules that we also follow in all our strategies. And there is no rocket science behind it. The only thing is that whatever rule you frame, you should stay consistent with it.
Yes.
Because once you create a rule and then you do it sometimes, but you don't do it at other times, then it will all go haywire.
Yes, yes. So the only reason for creating rules is to bring objectivity. And if we bring again subjectivity on the top of it, then there is no use of that objectivity.
Correct.
Amazing. And some of your strategies which you do, say weekly rotation and monthly rotation, how do you take a call? Say, for example, let's take one of your strategies, say MI20. You might have 20 stocks there.
Yeah.
How do you think about churn? Like when a new stock comes in and when, potentially existing stock goes out of that 20 players which you have in your
team? So again, any strategy, let's say, which has 20 stocks, let's say it is based on CNX 200. And let's say I'm using momentum of, let's say, last 11 months as my primary benchmark for the rate of change of price. So I'm ranking them every month based on that. And I've taken the top 20 last month. Now, one variation that you can do is that as soon as your existing 20 goes to a 21st position, you will take it out. And whatever has replaced it, you will bring that in. That could be one variation. Another variation could be that you allow more room for it for the play. So you may say that, although I've taken the top 20, I will allow the weakest one to go below, let's say, 30th position. And only then I will bring a new one into my top 20. So this way you can allow to lower the churn of your rotational momentum. You can allow them more space to move around, because some stocks may go from 20 to 22 and then come back into 18 in 2 months.
Yes.
That may happen.
Yes.
So these are very, very simple but no one fixed way of doing it. I mean, there are so many ways of doing this. And this science has been proven over 200 years of data by so many researchers, and you know, technical papers have been written on it.
Yeah.
That there is no doubt about that momentum investing will not do well. That is confirmed. It will do very, very well.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
The only thing is how you can create your mindset to be in alignment with that.
Yes.
Where you are able to buy when stock is going high and sell it higher.
Yes.
I mean, that realignment of, it's like rebooting the, you know, the mindset. Wiring in your brain.
Yes.
That I don't want to buy when stock is falling. I want to buy when stock is going higher.
Yes, absolutely. And yeah, great. I think, and one more thing I see a lot of investors doing these days, because, you know, the small case platform is available and there are so many options of different strategies available on the platform. I've seen some of my friends also getting more of a diversification within their own portfolio.
Sure.
So having 20%, 30% into momentum, 10% into value, you know, different styles, and they create a good portfolio out of it. So
yes,
that's
yes.
also a good starting point.
Yes,
I think
yes.
to get comfortable with this entire concept of momentum investing.
Yeah, I keep telling my users that, you know, if you are not confident, you put 10% into momentum and let one cycle play out. You keep doing whatever you're doing.
Yes.
You put 10-20% here, and then you compare the performance after 1-3 years. And if you find that, you know, over a cycle this has done better, then you move 30% more here.
Absolutely.
As per your comfort.
Absolutely. Amazing. So on the same lines, you know, you talked about 52-week high, all-time high. You know, from our childhood, we are told ki yaar 52-week high, it is too expensive. We should sell it. 52-week low, it is cheaper. Probably it is great value to buy. You should buy it more. So what are your thoughts? Like, what does the demand supply or market is suggesting when a stock hits a 52-week high or all-time high? And what should be thought process, you know, whether averaging down is useful strategy in your opinion, or adding your winners has been rewarding at, even at a higher price when the business is performing. What are your thoughts on this?
So I think, as you rightly said, 52-week high or all-time high or any high, 3-month high, 6-month high, any high has been because 99% people have been oriented towards the value side. These landmarks of a price move are seen with a lot of caution. You know, something goes to 52-week high, people will say, okay, let's get out of it. You know, it's gone up too high. But when a multi-bagger has to happen, it will go from 100 rupees to 1000 rupees. And let's say it's 52-week high was 150. So when it goes from 100 to 150, 90% people or 80% people get out. But then if it has to become a multi-bagger, you have to allow it to go far beyond the 52-week high. So at 52-week high is probably the place where most people are, you know, getting anxious or getting cautious. Whereas in my view, that is the place where the market is telling you that you may have ignored this stock till now. But now you must look at it. It is showing signs that it can become a multi-bagger.
Yes.
So the market is giving you that feedback that this is a potential multi-bagger. Then why should I give up that signal from the market? You know, and on the reverse side, when the stocks are going down, they're hitting all-time lows or 52-week low, etc. Then market is giving me an indication that this stock can continue to go down further.
Yeah.
So be cautious.
Yes.
And whereas most people will run to buy it, you know, at every level, and then maybe in some stocks they will do well, but in other stocks they may totally burn their investment out.
Yeah.
So it is extremely important that you realize what you're doing. If you are buying at lows, that is fine, but then you are not looking for momentum. Then you're looking for deep value. And you should know your value equation, how at that price it is creating value for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's nothing wrong in either school of thought, but my sense is from a pain perspective, holding on to losers for a long time gives you a lot of negative energy. And if something is possible to do without getting that negative energy, then why do it?
Yes. Yes. No, so, I've seen a lot of investors, you know, Yes Bank, DHFL, there are like tons of such examples.
So many.
Reliance Power, Reliance Capital, people have been doing
everything. And Vivek, another thing I would like to add here is that the average span of a company or a corporate is going down every decade now. If I buy a very fast pace, There is some study on S&P 500 stocks where the average span has gone down from 60 years to almost 15 years now.
Yes.
And we are living in a world of disruption.
Yes.
Every third year, there is some different concept that is coming and leading the markets. So the long-term concept that I'll buy and my children will bear the fruit of this stock, that is gone forever now.
Yeah.
Big companies which have huge market shareholding get disrupted in no time.
Yeah.
So you need to be, nimble footed. You need to have the concept of exiting your investment, which on whatever base you may have bought it, but there should be a way of exiting your investment in case things are not going according to you, even if it is fundamental risk.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I totally agree with that. So the cycles, even if we see the job scenario, right? People in the next generation, like if I see my father and forefather's generation, like one person was sticking into one company for 40 years. Same company, yes, that person has spent time. Now there are not companies which exist for 40 years, right? Leave alone job, right? And now people are changing.
If you are in a job for 5 to 7 years, maybe people will say that you are not so productive. That's why you're not able to move.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And another reason, the companies are getting disrupted. The growth is missing. The hikes people are not getting.
Absolutely.
And they need to change the job because the company itself is getting shaken very, very quickly, unless you are like in some very, very deep rooted, deep pocket competitive advantage company. Every
Correct.
Single company is getting disrupted, right? So that is like live example surrounding us. So let's say even Dish TV now, how many people watch Dish TV? It was a great thing before 5-7 years.
You know, so many examples, so many things.
Amazing. And Kodak, Nokia, so many things we have seen.
Correct.
Like giants, which has gone out of the sight now.
Yes.
Amazing. So finally, Alokji, in terms of risk, right? All of us as an investor are ultimately risk managers. And you keep talking about drawdown and the importance of drawdown. How any investor should think about drawdowns even before thinking about returns?
Mm.
And in your strategies, how you think about it?
So we are very clear about drawdowns is that we want to have strategies which have lower or shallower drawdowns. The reason is that when you have a shallow drawdown, you are able to come out of it quickly and perform once you are out of it. So when you are going from 100 to 50 in a drawdown and the next year maybe 100% gain year, you only reach back to 100. Right?
Yes.
But if you are able to get out of your drawdown, let's say at 75, instead of going from 100 going to 50, you get out at 100 going to 75, and then you get that 100% plus year, you will reach 150 next year. So outperformance should not happen only when market is going up. Outperformance should also happen when market is going down. So drawdown outperformance, so falling less and gaining more on the upside, these two, when they are combined together, that is where the magic gets created actually.
Amazing, amazing.
And where real life example for this analogy for this is that you fall into a ditch along the road, and if it's a shallow ditch, you will get up and start running again. But if it's a deep gorge, you will go inside and not be able to come out for a long time.
Absolutely, absolutely. Amazing. So finally, the last question, I think we have shared a lot of insights. The last powerful insight I want from you is for listeners who are wanting to achieve their financial freedom, ultimately compound their money in investing through stock market. What is that one or two message or advice you want to give them, ideally from your key learnings over vast decades of experience? Like, what do you want to share to somebody who is just getting started off, or they are in their mid of career, say from 35 to 40 years, and they want to ultimately reach that benchmark of becoming financially free?
This is a very good question, Vivekji. So what we have spent, I have spent 2.5 decades to learn. I can say that most people who are young today, they should take advantage of, all the resources and information available to them. And they can actually almost pre-learn all this within a few years. So this magic of compounding is the biggest thing that most people miss. Because by the time they learn that magic exists, they are already in their 40s and 50s. So that much runway gets lost. But for youngsters who are probably listening to this, I think don't worry about the the returns on your strategy as much as people usually do. So what I say is that even 12-15% return is also a huge return if you are able to compound it well over a very long period.
Yes.
So the idea that, and we are very fortunate to be, you know, investing and living in a country like India, which has decades of growth ahead of us. So, you know, so that part is also very important, because anybody who's sitting in a mature market, like in a Europe or somewhere other place, they cannot say that I can keep blindly investing for next 20 years and I will make money. It may or may not happen. But for economy like ours, emerging economy, and, you know, we have so much of growth ahead of us, that for the next many decades, we are sure that, you know, we are growing ahead. Yes. So from that perspective, it's a no-brainer that you have to keep investing.
Yes.
And just find the right vehicles. Maybe it's in mutual funds. Maybe it is you are running your own small case, or maybe you are following somebody. Maybe it is PMS or whatever is the vehicle. Find vehicles that can take you through this long journey, and you must keep investing in it.
Yes.
And besides the diversification within the equity, I strongly recommend that you do asset allocation as soon as your portfolio starts to become sizable. You must get into precious metals, you must get into real estate, you must get into fixed income. All those are, although they will never give you returns like equity, but as your portfolio starts becoming larger and as you get older, your heart also may not become more stronger, it may become weaker. You want to have more stabler outcome of your entire investing process. And what I have seen is that all this asset diversification really gives you a lot of peace of mind.
Yes.
So even lower double digit growth over a very long period of time, that compounding can really, really create magic. You don't need 40-50% CAGR type of return.
Yes, absolutely. I remember you speaking returns on unit stress, right? So that is very important metric.
Yes, yes.
And that's what I think in your all strategies also you follow, the lesser drawdown, the lesser stress, and better it is in terms of peaceful weekend investing. I think that is very, very important. Amazing. So great. I think we have come towards the end. So all the listeners, hope you got a lot of value from this discussion. Alokji has actually shared a lot of nuggets of wisdom and his experience of more than 25 years. He has tried to cover a lot of important points. If you want to start your compounding journey and associate with Alokji, I'll share the link of his small case strategy below this podcast. You can check them out. And if you feel he's the right person and you actually want to explore this magic of momentum investing, please do associate. And otherwise also, as Alokji said, at least whatever medium you feel like it's good for you and you feel like it is the right medium for you, at least start that compounding journey so that you can start realizing that magic of financial freedom as soon as possible. And that's it from our side. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to follow Alokji on Twitter, his handle is Weekend Investing. I'll also put the link below this. And he also does amazing daily bites every single day. He comes and shares his wisdom with retail investors on his YouTube channel. So do check that out as well. And I'm Vivek Mashrani, your host for this podcast. Keep listening and keep tuning into the Technofunda Investing podcast. Thank you again for listening, and thank you Alokji for sharing this amazing wisdom with the audience here. I'm sure they will have found a lot of powerful wisdom from your learning journey. Thank you so much.
Thank you Vivekji, and thank you to all your listeners, and I wish them all the very best.
Thank you. Cheers.